I grew up majorly in the village, somewhere in Imo State. But again, another interesting thing is, in the midst of all of this, I got a job at the time with PNG. I think education or going to school should just be a thing of learning, right? I think people should be judged based off on what they have, not based off on what they read and cram. You know, when I cram it, I'll go it out. But what you know is in your head, you know it. Alpass is my second company. My first company was Parkrowdy, a mobile app that helps users to find and pay for parking spots in real time. Something I chased for 16 months, I got in 1 week. I got access signed on paper to all marketing reps. People like you and I do not trust products. People trust people. Everyone wants to build everything. And that thing kills businesses. Everyone just wants to own everything versus having to collaborate and even partner and create more value.
The real conversation happens beyond the boardrooms. Join me at an intersection of business and lifestyle. Where suits meets t-shirt. This is the Frankly Business Podcast. Welcome.
Welcome to the Frankly Business Podcast, ladies and gentlemen. It's a great time. You know how we do it here, man. It's business. And this is where we really unwind. It's the mini Harvard Business School. It's the mini Stanford, Kenichi, what do you call it? Mini Columbia. Why are we saying this? Basically, once you go to some of these business schools, you're not really taught by, like, 100% of the whole curriculum is not being taught by the professor or something. They bring people who are in the industry, who have been able to put their prints in the sands of time and been able to perhaps... put their skin in the game to come teach you the ropes of their industry. It's not a function of textbook knowledge. It's not a function of theory. It's a function of the man who's been there, who's gotten his hands dirty to come explain what it takes to build a business. So when you meet that challenge, when you're on your way to building that same kind of business or that way, if you're playing in that same industry, you'll be able to navigate your way because you've heard from somebody who have perhaps gone through that route. And that's why we have the Frankly Business Podcast. This is why we have the conversation around business, around the economy, and around finance. I've got no other person beside me but the handsome, the fine, the man for the ladies, the man with the complete beard. What's the name of your beard, oil? Tell us.
I don't want to do promo. Better cut me my check.
Pride on the elbow.
Well, thank you for having me. Anytime you come in with this introduction, the energy, unmatched. Well, thank you for having me. I'm super excited about this episode because it touched more about an industry that I'm very passionate about, which is tech.
Yeah.
And many Nigerian youth are also passionate about, which is tech. They say tech is the new oil. So hearing from people that have built, that have become the Conoy and the Exxon movie of the tech industry will be fun.
And you know they like a lot. You know, just tell them who you are. The vice president of Godfather Production. Anyways, let us go into the heart of the matter. Ladies and gentlemen, we're really looking at the tech ecosystem funding. Nigeria has literally become a second fiddle to the likes of Kenya, to the likes of Rwanda, to the likes of Egypt. Those guys right now are the ones controlling the VCs. It used to be Nigeria, but right now it looks like VCs are like saying, Nigeria, please sort out your issue. Your whole FX crisis, your foreign reserve, look at what is happening with your country, with your economy. Your purchasing power is depleting by the day, and investors are not patriotic to the detriment of their return on investment. They are not. even if they are, the color of their skin is green, they put their return on investment forward before your country. So obviously they will go to the next safe haven for their investments, which define Kenya as one of those. But right now we're seeing a lot of political unrest in that country. Who knows what might be the outcome of that. But look at what is happening to Rwanda. These guys are doing, the Rwandan tech ecosystem, doing amazing stuff. A lot of Nigerian tech founders even end up going there to just have an expression of their business. And look at what is happening to Egypt. So let's have this conversation around funding. What is really happening? And remember, we had a lot of stories around Mara, a lot of stories around companies in the past that have been able to raise funds. But some of their founders, some of them were very prudent with the funds they raised. Some of them not so prudent. And some of them literally reckless. So everything, we're going to have the conversation on this episode of the Frankly Business Podcast. My name is Frank. Complete it. Fagbo. So, I'm taking a look at our guest. He's a handsome gentleman, a man of few words, but obviously on the Frankly Business Podcast, so few words not allowed. They're going to say a lot anyways. We have no other person but the founder. If you're driving, please park. Yeah. If you're driving, I know what I'm saying. Why I'm saying this. If you're driving, park. And if you're a young boy and looking at confessing your sins and navigating your way to the tech ecosystem, also, you might find this interesting. If you're perhaps an intending founder, or you're trying to just, you have an idea and you're trying to navigate your way around funding, you might also want to listen. Whoever you are, as long as you're interested in a value-based conversation, value-based oriented conversation, definitely the Frankly Business Podcast is for you. And you don't want to lose out on any statement made by our guest. He's the founder of Our Pass, Chinomso Sam. He's the founder of Our Pass, and they've been able to pivot and done a lot of things. Started in 2020, and right now they've become a full-fledged business bank. Let's hear from him. Nice to meet you. Nice to come to our famous couch.
Yeah, thanks for the invitation. And thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Okay. So,
call me Sam.
Oh, Sam. Okay. Yeah. So, I love to do this. Sometimes, a lot of people are just blown away by the light camera action. A lot of people are blown away by the rounds of funding. A lot of people are blown away by the tech bro lingua. But they don't know the work behind the scene. They don't know the track record. They don't know what it takes to get to that particular level. I don't know if you get my point. So they're like, I love this, but can you put in the work? So let's have a few backstory. Who is Sam? What's your journey like? What is your journey like?
So I have an investor, right, that calls himself a village boy from Ovim. So Ovim is a small village in Abia State, right? His name is Professor Ndubisi Ekekwe. He's a renowned professor known globally. He said he's a village boy from Ovim. So most times when I read what he has, like his posts, right, on LinkedIn, and I see or come across like him being a village boy from Ovim, I look at it and I smile, because I like to think and feel like I am actually the village boy. Mm. Do you understand? Yeah, so I grew up majorly in the village, right, somewhere in Imo State. Sometime from, say, 2003, to close to, I think, 2012, right? So for me, that was more or less like, you know, when a child is growing, right? I think the major path of that growth, right, it should be when the child gets to know the real difference between 5 and 6, right? And I like to think that should be around like their teenage age, so maybe pre-teenage and somewhere around like the end of that teenage age and stuff, right? So relocated to somewhere in the village in Imo State, grew there, attended schools in the village, finished my secondary education there, and then, as God may have it, my first jam, I didn't get admission. I applied to Covenant University to study either electrical or computer engineering. I can't remember. I think electrical. But I didn't meet the jam cutoff mark. So, you know, at the time, I think the jam cutoff mark was somewhere around, 240 or 250, one of them. Then, right now, a lot of people are enjoying. You see, you want to go and study engineering, your cutoff mark is less than 200.
Yeah.
Right. I scored 211, right, my first jam. And from the house, I was told I already failed. No one can do anything. 211 to get into a university. No. There's no way around it. So I had to sit back. But whilst I sat back, I think a friend of mine at the time gained admission to do pre-degree in Futo. Then I was in Imo State. So I decided to try it out before, instead of just sitting at home and stuff in Imo at the time. So I gained admission for pre-degree. So whilst I was doing it, I was also trying to rewrite JAMB again, right? So the second time I wrote JAMB, I scored, I think, 256. So I had crossed the cutoff mark. So I had also finished my first the first semester, right, for pre-degree in Futo. And then went to Ilorin, University of Ilorin, to write post-UTME. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so then I gained admission to study electrical and electronics engineering. So think about it, that was the way I left the whole village life and then went to Ilorin, right, to study electrical electronics engineering, right? So did the engineering was, at the time, I don't know of now, 5 years. I think it's still the same thing, yeah. 5 years. So what that means basically is I gained admission in 2012. So 5 years should be 2017, right?
That's right.
Yeah. So maybe the whole journey, the whole experience growing up, you know, being in the village, going to farming, fetching firewood, cooking with like your normal, you know, these things people look at today and they're like, man, they can't do it. And mm-hmm. all. I did all of those things growing up, like fetching what I would wheelbarrow. Going like, I mean, super long distance. You push the wheelbarrow, you fetch water. I can remember the few times when I started at the time, you'd be coming down or getting back home with water. There's this, the junction into like our own kindred or village area or something. There's a junction called Lisbon. So there's this pavement or something that goes down.
Sounds like Portugal. Lisbon.
Yeah, Lisbon. So from the road,
yeah.
You would like take down the wheelbarrow, like down into like, I would always somersault there. So the entire water. Then there was no,
because
yeah.
to hold it back.
Yeah. Then the water I used to fetch water wasn't like your normal jerry can and yeah. stuff. It was like, you know, paint buckets.
Yeah.
You know, the Dulux bucket and stuff. Yeah. So those buckets, when you finish fetching water, you close it
well.
It will stick, like it will hold.
But to open that will be hard.
Yes, to open it. But it will cover, it will seal it up very well.
Yeah.
Right. And then I'll carry four of the buckets. You know, we've already have one, two, then put two again at the back. Or at times you put like, I carry like three. So one, two in front and put one in the middle behind.
Mm.
You understand? When I'm coming down as a young boy, then it's a somersault. Like I will tumble with the barrel and stuff, right? And everything will pour.
Mm.
Do you understand? I think one thing I did not encounter at the time was the buckets getting damaged. I'm not sure I encountered, like, had the challenge of having those buckets even broken. Do you understand? So what I would do is, I would turn, go back, go and fetch another one, seal it up again. When I get there and I'm coming down, at times I won't even be able to come down. That was the biggest hurdle for me.
Yeah.
I can remember a couple of times I had to like call some like elderly guys and stuff around to help me push it down. So they will hold it because they are used to it. They are more experienced in it. To help me push the barrel down. So when it's down, I will now go back, push my team home, and push it. When you get home, you point. Now this is me telling you, like in the entire village at the time, my own village, there was no I think it was just one person that had a borehole there. It wasn't even from that village. It was the Owerri municipal chairman. So for some reason, he came there to build. So if they don't open the tap, you have to go to the next village. That's what, do you understand? To fetch and then you come back, right? So, but that's by the way, it's not time to say those stories, right? Yeah. So getting to University of Ilorin, I think from 100 level, I discovered like a different thing about myself. The fact that I loved things around leadership, right? So from my 100 level days, think about getting into a school where at the time it was a Yoruba setting because it was in a Yoruba state, right? And Muslim dominated school. Right, right. So now being like a Christian, being Igbo as well in that school, wasn't really at like an easy thing and journey, right? Because first thing first is, even if you don't face so much discrimination one way or the other from like colleagues, the other folks you would face that.
That's right.
That mm-hmm. from, right? But I like to think I had amazing colleagues, right? And thank God things are now like a bit even much more better. But I became a class rep for my 100 level days, right? I can remember those days when you get into the class, everybody's speaking Yoruba.
Yeah.
Like, everybody. The majority, at least over 90%, speaking Yoruba.
So do you understand Yoruba?
No, I don't. And you don't even know what, the only thing you know is wa, come, joko, sit down.
So how did you survive?
I did not just survive. I like to think I became a force to reckon with. So a force that even the folks there would have to come to, right? So did that for like 5 years. 2017, I was going to graduate. I didn't graduate. Some people will say I was stubborn, right? Again, you can't change who you are. If you're stubborn, you're stubborn, right? The only thing is, you don't be stubborn to cross certain lines that you shouldn't cross, right? But yes, I was faced with one of the biggest challenges I had ever faced. So instead of graduating, some certain people just felt probably they could just do whatever they needed to do at the time and stuff. I spent
additional two years
in school, right? So what that meant at the time was me graduating in 2019 versus leaving in 2017. So my mates left in 2017 officially. But the interesting thing is, that's 2017 when I was meant to graduate, which I also felt I was going to graduate because the issue I had was more or less like a big issue for most of my colleagues. And this is cut across every other engineering department.
Yeah.
So not just electrical, like mechanical, civil, amongst many other departments, right? And that issue was the fact that lots of people had carryover courses. Do you understand that they needed to fix? Right. So I think it was even myself everyone ran to help solve that problem, because definitely who wants to stay one day outside of the day of graduation? So I can remember I brought my folks, like other departmental presidents together, had the conversation that, hey, a lot of people are having this issue, including myself.
Yeah.
So I was more of the politician. Not like I wasn't intelligent though.
Yeah.
I was intelligent, but maybe I didn't pay attention to my day-to-day classwork.
Yeah.
Right. Because every other president from across all other departments were like very intelligent boys, maybe high 2-1, right? Or maybe first class. To be honest, I was the only one maybe playing around 2-2 at the time. Do you understand? So everyone looked at me and Sam, now you, let's say you get the problem. And me, I'm like, if I get the problem, so I just tell them that the other guys, but there are lots of people within your own department. So let's solve this.
Yeah.
And then I took everyone to the then dean of Faculty of Engineering at the time to say, hey, everyone is facing, most people are facing this problem. We think there should be a way to solve this. And when I was done having that conversation, leading the team to have that conversation with the then dean, something that has never happened in the history of that university and that faculty, and of which even afterwards, till date, no one has been able to pull it, happened. Right. So if you know University of Ilorin so well, you know that Ilorin is so good at, was so good, and I guess still is, at automating things. So the whole, I think they were the first to do the whole CBT exams and all of those things, right? So again, at the beginning of each session, right, academic year, you have to, you would have chosen all of your courses and all of, so everything was already like laid down. Do you get? But for some reason, the dean said, okay, he will take it up to the DVC ACAD, right? So the Deputy Vice Chancellor of Academics, to have the conversation. Within 2 days, I got the feedback that everyone who was facing that should register their, what do you call it, carryover courses manually. So they added an extra, was it 6 units? Think about 4 or 6 units, of no, 5 or 6 units. Mm-hmm. So you can add everything in manually, not even on the website, just register it through a form, take it to your HOD and everyone will sign off and stuff. And boom, you do it and then go. Till tomorrow, most of my colleagues still say thanks to the people who graduated, like lots of people. But myself, who did it, I took my my form to the then HOD to say, please, he should sign it off. Because I was a stubborn guy and done a lot of stubborn craziness. So I didn't sign it. So he won't sign it. So I spilled. And splashed.
So you died for their sins.
Yeah.
I can't picture that guy and this guy ahead.
Yeah.
There are two contrast people.
Yeah. So what happened? Yeah, I spent 2 extra years. But again, another interesting thing is, in the midst of all of this, I got a job at the time with P&G, Procter & Gamble. Mm. Now think about over 10,000 people applying to P&G, because P&G, again, they just left the country, I think, last month. P&G is also, was at the time, one of the best paying companies when it comes to salaries, compensations in Nigeria. And I think still the leading FMCG in the world.
Yeah.
Do you understand? So if you get to work in P&G, you would know like you're one of the best in Nigeria. Do you understand? Yes, please fact check me on this, right? So I remember during our time, over 2017, over 10,000 people applied. Like every year, tens of thousands of people applied. And they probably wouldn't take up to 10 people. So you go through like the first exam, go through the second. If you scale through, you start going through series of interviews. Do you understand? We're 9 out of over 10,000 that got it. Yeah. I was the only one from my school.
You didn't know somebody?
No.
Just
so I wrote exams. Oh yeah, over and over.
How many exams?
Two.
Yeah.
So 2 exams. Very analytical exams. Like they just to test your IQ and your brain.
So are you going to say that the school system is not designed to test your analytical skills?
Yeah, using...
Because it looks like you were very good when it comes to analytics.
Yeah, using me as an example, I would say yes. Right, again, don't forget, I had mentioned earlier that it felt at the time like I stopped paying attention to like the typical, like the things like the academics, courses and stuff. I was just doing things around leadership. I was more involved in politics. But like maybe before then, like all of the schools, secondary schools I went to and all, I was probably like the top best, like top, like part of the top, say top 3, top 5.
Yeah.
Do you understand? Yes. Yeah. So to answer your question, I would say 100% yes. Because at the copy where we went at this school, like I remember he would open your book for me because I would always help you in like in other things that you need. You know, as a student, you need things. You need to get across to lecturers and stuff.
Yes.
That's Sam the runner. Do you understand? Yeah. So I understood all of those parts. So when it now comes to a test, and you know, I would always not prepare. So when I enter, I'll say, guy, how far? Before we enter, we'll see together.
But no, the formation is always like this.
Yeah.
3-3.
Yeah. So it was
this one open, this one open.
Yeah. It was so crazy. Like even during tests and exams, when I'm entering the hall, you know, they will search you and they don't search me. Yeah, and I'm speaking honestly.
Yeah, they'll
search, So I wasn't just the, and they were searching other class reps of other departments.
You were the class rep of the class rep.
So nobody would search me. Like, how do you want to search me? Because, you know, this, the lecturers then that were involved in this searching were like the younger ones.
Yes, actually, the profs, they don't get engaged.
Yeah.
They come in later, like 30 minutes after the exam is on.
So when I'm entering you, how do you want to search me? It's me you need to still do the things, to deliver on your tax, right?
Yeah.
So like, how do you want to search me?
Oh, yeah.
When I enter, I can say, everybody sit down here. I will join and if I don't sit down here, I'll move to this side. That person will move. Do you understand?
I see where this was better.
Yeah, so it was like that. Yeah, so I gained, like, got that job and stuff. And a guy that the school did not clear off at that very year.
Yeah.
I was probably, there was no colleague of mine earning what I was earning at the time.
Hmm.
Yeah, P&G, I had a car. I was given a Hyundai iX35 with a driver that would drive me from Monday to Friday. Saturday, I go and play around my car, drive around. The village boy, moving to...
What room?
Yeah, I was a sales key account manager. I managed P&G's business for Lagos. So Lagos was divided into two.
Okay.
You know, Lagos remains the largest commercial territory. So what you bring from one part of Lagos can probably not be compared to what others will bring from 10 different states.
That's right.
Do you understand? So I managed half of Lagos State, led a team of close to 150 people. Right. So, so I became a young, small, big boy.
So I just want to ask you, what gave you that confidence? Why I'm asking this question is, Muslims, when you see people who graduate
with a third class.
Or third class.
In the end, yeah.
They don't have the confidence to apply for some kind of jobs.
Mm-hmm.
They just go into self-employment or perhaps just start selling wig or do makeup or whatever. I don't even get
my head.
So what gave you the confidence? And most times when you see those jobs, we're just being practical here.
Mm-hmm.
You see things like minimum of 2-1. You know, these. What gave you that confidence to apply, despite
I think first is for people who know me so well. When people talk about me, they will tell you, or if you ask questions, they will tell you that Sam is this guy with confidence over the roof. In fact, some people will tell you Sam is arrogant. Do you understand? I think. Over the years, I've gotten to the point where I no longer argue. When you say I'm arrogant, I say, okay, that's fine, no problem. Because again, it doesn't change anything in my life and stuff, right? But actually, I'm not. I'm just extremely confident. When I want something, I go after it 100%. And I'm telling you that will make that happen. I'm telling you will make it happen to your face. So you might be thinking this one is just arrogant. But that's not arrogance. There's a distinct and a clear line. Though it might be very slim between arrogance and confidence. Do you understand? So I think it was even a friend of mine, Ezinne, who we had met in Futo during pre-degree years in 2012, that sent me that stuff in 2017. So she sent me like the P&G advert for new intake. And P&G is not the company that hires people just from anywhere. So P&G's model is built from within. So for you to even be a senior person, you must have grown from internship up. Do you understand?
Yeah.
So you would embody the entire culture of the firm and grow with it upwards. Do you understand? So that was why I applied, really. I'm not sure, but I think they would even write it 2-1 and all. So the truth is, even if they put it there and say 2-1, when you apply, do exam. The first exam was online, and you pass it. Mm-hmm. I can remember after that one, they asked us to come for physical exam in the office. So it was in Ikeja, Isaac John, right? And when we went there, the crowd, we wrote exams in batches with pencil, and they'll give you the question paper, you shade, and all of those things, right? If you don't if they tell you stop, if your hand should move, they'll tell you the rules. For them, that's already a red flag. They will probably not mark you.
No, you're stubborn.
When you're stubborn, there are places you don't take the stubbornness to.
Yeah.
Right? So, okay. When you scale through first exam, second exam, if you know, the first one, it could be that somebody helped you to do it.
Yeah, okay.
The physical one, who wants to help you?
Sure.
Nobody, right? I can remember I helped a friend of mine who I used to copy from his copies tests.
Yeah.
Copy him during tests, copy him during exam. But he wrote the pianist's first exam. He didn't make it, he wrote it twice. He brought it to me in the house. I wrote it for him, he passed. He passed the online, he was the only one I was aware of that made it from University of Ilori in addition to myself for the physical exam. But the physical one, you have to stay on your own and write it. He didn't make it. Super intelligent guy. Like, and when I say, I mean super intelligent. He didn't make it.
What do you think is the reason?
So I think our schools today have clearly defined a way or created a way they use or a model they use in defining who they think is intelligent and who they think isn't. Do you understand? Mm-hmm. Whereas my thinking about life is, and again, when it comes to education, is I think education or going to school should just be a thing of learning, right? I think people should be judged based off on what they have, not based off on what they read and cram. You know, when I cram it, I'll pour it out.
Sure.
But what you know is in your head, you know it, and that's all, really. Right, so that was it. That was my experience, right? And I think even getting that job taught me lots of things, right? It even opened my eyes to a lot of other things, like even about myself. I started seeing myself from a different light. Do you understand? Mm. Yeah, that, hey, Sam, you are who you think you are. Do you understand? So for me, that was it. And went back again to school to go clear up things. So, you know, I spilled.
Yeah.
I wasn't even meant to be, one of the courses I was not meant to, that I spilled on, like a carryover course I was writing, because I was shuttling Lagos and Ilorin to maybe do, you know, the whole attendance in class and all of those things. They didn't let me write my exam. Yes, the man didn't let me write my, the lecturer didn't let me write my, because he said I didn't meet, was how many percentage
in for attendance.
So
I didn't have any sure guy.
No, those ones were part of the those ones were part of the people that said they will show me. So actually everything, I went back to Ilorin, stayed in class.
Left PNG?
Yeah, I left. I was not there then. Stayed in class, did everything so I could graduate. I wrote the exam. So for me at that point, it was no longer a thing of proving to anyone. Trying to get anything out. It was just a thing of, okay, I started this journey since 2012. They've given me an additional 2 years. Let me finish this. Know that I'm a graduate. Do you understand? Since the very day I dropped my, last pen, right, for exam, I've only entered the University of Ilorin afterwards once, maybe last year. Somebody invited me, like they had to, from a different faculty, that please, I should come and speak to the students on entrepreneurship. In a different faculty, away from Faculty of Engineering.
Yeah.
That's the only time I've, these 2 legs, have entered.
You have a personal vendetta.
Yeah, I've not entered into that, like that school, till now. Right, and I've also not even seen my certificate. I've not touched anything certificate. But I know anytime I need it, I'll go, because I graduated. I checked, at least I followed through on everything. I saw it on my portal. You are now a graduate.
Yeah.
So what you graduated with. Everything, hey, I'm okay with that. Right. And I think that thing changed a lot of things, right? Changed my perception a bit on the way we hire, right, on our pass. So over the years, when we're hiring for jobs, we don't hire based off on, oh, I finished with a first class, 2-1, 2-2. When you come for interview, when you're interviewed properly and you scale it, then we know you know the job. If you have the skill set, we hire you. Do you understand? It was just, I think, recently that we had to start changing our model, because when you are now in a heavily regulated environment, protecting the interests of the business, and even the interests of the people within the business, more importantly, becomes very key and important, right? So we now look at all of those things. Where did you finish from? Sending your certificates. Our first 2 years, I wasn't even, like, why? I was always telling HR, no, we don't need that. But now I'm the one saying we need it. Hmm. Yeah.
Oh, was that one? Hmm. Let's now go into your startup journey.
Mm-hmm.
And when did you do PNG?
2018. Yeah.
And then you left, and you started our pass in 2020.
No. So, whilst I was in, I started Outpass is my second company. Mm-hmm. My first company was Park Crowdy. Yeah, a mobile app that helps users. Yeah, a mobile app that helps users to find and pay for parking spots in real time. So whilst I was at PNG, so you know, I said I led a team of, I think, close to 150 people or about 150 people. Mm. This is, at the time, this was across several channels of trade. So, like the open market. So, open market is like your typical trade fair, Balogun market, area market, like those kind of markets, right? So, you would have like a sales team in there, right? Even a sales manager, channel managers as well, that manages different product lines and as well, all of the products that, and they sell within that market. Do you understand? So every market, there's a team for every market.
Mm.
That's for open market. There's also another channel we call DTR. So DTR means direct to retail. So direct to retail is more or less like those who sell within your neighborhoods. So if you're, I don't know if you're familiar with maybe when you are home or maybe in the morning or later in the evening, if you're coming outside of your house, you see some very small vans.
Yeah.
Maybe you are selling Indomie or selling different products inside vans. They come and they sell to the small stores within your neighborhood and the kiosks. So the way you're able to come out of your house or even send a house help to quickly go out and buy you soap outside, quickly go out and buy you toothbrush, quickly go out and buy you toothpaste.
Yeah.
The channel that powers all of those things is called DTR, direct to retail. So direct to retail folks are the folks that sell into the neighborhoods. Because you cannot wake up, you want to buy toothpaste and go to Area Market. You can't do that.
Yeah, sure.
Now, the last channel is the channel we call Modern Trade.
Okay.
Right? So, Modern Trade and e-commerce are more or less merged together in a way. So, Modern Trade are the folks who sell to HSMs. HSMs are hyper supermarkets.
Okay.
Like ShopRite, the Spars, all of those large kind of businesses.
Yeah.
Do you understand? Yeah, so those were like the different channels, right? That's I don't know if I answered your question, right?
Yeah.
Thank you.
The issue of I've always been trying to understand how most of this what do you call it?
Okay, yes, no, sorry. So I said those were like the different channels, right? So in the course of doing all of this through DTR, I realized that there was a huge problem with parking of cars. So those different vans, when they're driving within neighborhoods in Lagos here, their cars were getting clamped now, those buses, by last mile, because we're not parking properly, we're parking on the road, and Lagos is already congested.
Okay.
Do you understand? So that was when I discovered the problem of parking. So when I left and I went back to Ilorin to go finish up, I was already thinking of the idea of solving a parking problem. Right. So that was also one of the reasons I had to, I was now also in Abuja. Right, helping, thinking about it to flesh it out, because Abuja was the only place where they had once before the time done something around parking or asked people to pay for parking both on the street in addendum to like in market or in an enclosed parking space.
Mm-hmm.
Right, like I mean, market. So there's something called on-street parking,
okay,
and there's something called off-street parking. Off-street parking is like your market.
Okay.
You drive into the market, you pay at the gate, you pay at exit or something. And then the private parking lots that have like the walls around it and stuff, right? So when I noticed that problem in Lagos, I took it to Abuja to solve it. But I didn't focus on on-street, I focused on off-street.
Market. The market big enough?
Yeah, so like the Wuse market, Gariki market.
Yeah, like the market in terms of people that use your product.
So in 2019, when the product was to be launched out, we didn't launch it out anymore. So Packard was my first company, yeah, no doubt. Mm-hmm. But Packard did not go live. And the reason it didn't go live, I think at the time were just three major reasons. One was the fact that I had literally told the entire FCT for maybe 16 months looking for someone to give me access to like those markets, because those markets were being managed by an arm of the FCT called Abuja Market Management Limited. So when you get a partnership with them, you'll be able to go into those markets and automate the entire market for parking using our technology at the time. So, but I didn't get anyone. Again, I knew nobody. A village boy from, I didn't know anybody, no one to support and stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So, but eventually I met a man, a major real estate guy who is also like, when you count like the top five real estate folks in the FCT, you have to mention him. He's a Northern. I met him and he became my mentor. Something I had chased for maybe 16 months. After I was done explaining everything to him, going to his office, pitching everything clearly, he said, "Don't worry, the man in charge is his brother." Again, in quotes, his brother. And he took me there. Something I chased for 16 months, I got in 1 week. I got access, signed on paper, to all markets in the FCT. Right, so when that document came in, it was already, was it 1 month before COVID started or 2 months before COVID started? So in November, Packard was already selected top 10 startups in mobility across Africa from over 222 startups in mobility. Now, out of these top 10 startups, 9 of them were already operational, making revenue no matter how small.
Yeah.
Packard was just still at the idea phase. There was really nothing else away from deal and stuff, right? Yeah. So I went to Johannesburg. So it was a demo day sponsored by Bosch, the global technology infrastructure company, like the BOSCH. Yes. So, interestingly, that was even my first time getting on an aircraft. That was November 19, 2019. Do you know the aircraft I got into? The aircraft that took me to Johannesburg straight. So it wasn't even the local one some people take, or some people had taken before me.
Yeah.
So it means I took mine and I went out of Nigeria, from Abuja, directly, right? That was the only reason I rushed around to go get an international passport. And that was how I flew, first time in an aircraft. I was in the aircraft and I now forgot that whilst they were asking us questions via email before, like the whole trip and stuff, because it was properly organized.
Yeah.
They asked, okay, what kind of meal do you like? You know, so that they don't give you like the wrong meal and all of those things. I didn't know they were taking note of those things to also inculcate it into like the whole flight details and all of those things. I was in the aircraft and one of the folks there came to me and said, "Oh, hi, Sam. You know the way, I don't know, if you're like on an international aircraft, even if they will serve everyone, when you have a special order, they walk up to you first to ask you, are you somewhere, is it? Are you Fabo?" You know, they'll ask you those questions. Yeah. So that was where they came. I said, "Yeah, I'm Sam." And the next thing was they brought mine. They had not even served other people like the normal meal. And so they brought mine. And I just had to comport myself because in my head I was already feeling like what's happening. Do you understand? I said, "Yeah, I'm Sam." And I can remember there was this very beautiful lady that sat to my left.
Yeah.
She was just looking at me like, looking. She didn't know what to say. I should be thinking that this one is a big boy.
You know that, I hope this guy.
You know, that one village boy where God just opened up. Now grace carried me to go. Do you understand?
Yeah.
And she asked me, so you, it seems you made the offer. Like, yeah, I said, oh, yeah, I did. But I didn't know these guys already. Do you understand? So yeah. That was it. And I got into South Africa, Johannesburg to be precise, right? And yeah, we had the demo day, a very interesting one, came back. Was immediately we got back. So I went with my partner at the time. Was immediately we got back into Nigeria. It wasn't up to 14 days. It's just shutting down borders. Yeah. Because of COVID. Yeah, it wasn't up to 14 days. Yeah, I can't remember so well because I think South Africa shut down first before Nigeria. So had we even stayed a bit, no, it wasn't up to 14. Yeah, it wasn't up to, had we stayed a bit longer, we probably not, would not have been able to come out.
Would not have been able to see our past. Who knows? Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, we're going on a quick break, and when we come back, we're definitely going to continue the conversation. All right, welcome back. So let's go into your journey in our past. After the packing startup. How was your journey into our past?
So yeah, COVID happened, right? Yeah. And the packing industry didn't make sense again anymore because everyone was at home, I think, for 7-8 months.
Yeah.
Right. So, but then that was when I noticed and encountered like a very interesting problem. I still call it interesting because it is actually and was interesting. And that was around watching like everyone at home.
Yeah.
Try to buy things online. So, you know, lots of businesses that were had like physical outlets shut down. People were only selling via social channels.
That's right.
And e-commerce platforms, right? So a lot of people even had to put up like e-commerce websites and stuff. A lot of people also had to leverage like storefronts from different providers.
Right.
So the fact that consumers at the time had to go through that problem of having to fill their personal information over and over again, like filling the first name, last name, phone number, email, shipping address, as well as their debit card information over and over and over again. I saw that as a very huge problem, right? Because at the time, you know, we felt the world had changed. There was now a new normal.
Yeah.
Do you understand? And part of the new normal when it comes to like buying things, shopping, it was more or less buying online. We felt people were now going to just literally be at home. Everything they had to do was just going to be done at home and stuff. But thank God, it's not what it is anymore today, right? So that was when I discovered that problem and I decided to dig deep into it to understand the problem better. So I found something, what I found was interesting, right? The fact that that problem was making 3 out of 4 shopping carts to be abandoned yearly, accounting for largely about 75% of cart abandonment annually. Because as a consumer, it's your money, you're going to shop, and when you're done picking whatever you want to pick, you now have to start filling different informations. Again, had it been it's just on one platform, but having to do that over and over and over again across different platforms, I saw that as a very huge problem. And the problem was existing on a $3.5 trillion e-commerce and retail market.
Globally,
right? So I decided to solve that problem, right, by building RPAS one-click checkout. So RPAS one-click checkout was to solve that problem by enabling consumers to pre-fill their information, first name, last name, phone number, email, shipping address, as well as their credit card or debit card information on RPAS. And they don't have to fill it again on any e-commerce platform that has RPAS one-click checkout button integrated. So it was a payment gateway, yes, but it was a clear checkout with a single button. So the goal at the time was, when you go there, you just click on the button on that platform once. When you click on it, you won't have to go through any of those things. All you just see is a countdown, right? That's just all you see.
Yeah.
A countdown of about 50 seconds. So the reason for the 50 seconds majorly is just to say that if you did not pay for that item, please cancel it.
Yeah.
It was more or less like a grace time, a buffer to say, cancel it. Maybe it was done out of mistake. Cancel it and the order wouldn't go through. But if the 50 seconds countdown gets to 0-0, that's all.
But I have a question.
Yeah, please.
Looking at your solution to the problem, how was it launching the product and also educating the customers about how to use this product? Because I think we're used to filling out those details, but you are coming to change how consumers buy. Let me put that way, just one click away. So you have to build trust. Because how would I leave my details with you guys and they come back and stuff like that? So how do you go around that bottleneck?
So you know, Nigeria and Africa already today. It has been that way till date over the years. It is a nation and as well a continent, right, with low trust. However, businesses have found a way to navigate the low trust environment, which is basically by understanding that people like you and I do not trust products. People trust people. So I'll give you an example. If you see a product today, you most likely would not use it. But if I come to you as a friend and I tell you, because I know you're my friend, like we've been friends, and I tell you, oh, I use this product, it will work, what would you do? And I say, will you not go and try it? Definitely. You would, right?
Definitely.
Yeah, so that was one of the ways. And secondly was also by partnering with like companies that had already built trust over the years so that we can tap into that trust, basically brand equity, and drive our product. That was why we paid more attention to like a Jumia, a Conga, a Flutterwave, and a Paystack at the time, though with different product offerings. So to a Flutterwave, we said, okay, let's be on your storefront. However, as well, let's also be on your gateway. Paystack was the same thing. But on a Jumia, on a Conga, it was more of, let's be at the point of payment, checkout. So you can have off versus all other payment options. So it was our pass or others at the time. That was the way we positioned it for sales.
So how did the market receive it? What was the numbers like?
Everybody we went to said they had a team working on it. But till today, no one released checkout. But they all had a team working on it.
Everyone.
They all had a team working on it. You know, over here in Nigeria, everyone wants to build everything.
Only value chain.
Yes. And that thing kills businesses. Everyone just wants to own everything versus having to collaborate and even partner and create more value. Do you understand? So that was the major problem we faced at the time. All of the folks who went getting across to like decision makers is never my problem. It has never been till date. Do you understand? I spoke directly with the Jumia CEO at the time. I spoke directly with the Conga founder. In fact, the Conga founder, Shagaya sold to Leo Stanley Aki.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, so spoke directly to Leo Stanley Aki. Leo Stanley Aki connected me to the then CEO that was reporting to him, that I should have a direct conversation with him.
Okay.
Do you understand? That's the guy who's been on the news that committed suicide.
Oh, yeah.
Like Nick Moody.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can remember I invited him out for dinner in Echo Hotel December 1st, 2021. Yeah, so we had the same conversation. They so rest in peace by the way. Right, so so I had conversations like all around. Everyone who said they were building it, they were building it. Because checkout was booming globally.
Yeah, true.
At the time, globally. We did not even have to do any PR work. We're already being mentioned as being part of the top four best, checkout companies in the world by TechCrunch.
Let us look at what your business model brought about. You were involved in so many partnerships. You were involved in meeting people, and you said you never had a problem it's meeting the movers and shakers of any company, any industry. It might come easy for you, but there are so many people that don't know how to do it. There are so many people that that's their biggest challenge. There are people that they don't know how to network. There are people that they don't know the ingredients, what it takes for them to be able to pull such move. What would you say is the ABC of networking? What would you say is the way to partner, especially if you're coming from, if you're holding the shorter end of the value?
I think first I would say leverage. Do you understand? So leverage is the key thing one must know or have. Do you understand? So I'll give you a very simple example. So take, for instance, you want to meet a Dangote. Yeah. You want to meet an Otedola, right? Let's say you have, based off on what you're doing today, or based off on your business, you want to partner with their own organization, right? You already know by default that you have close to zero capacity. Forget the fund you've raised. It's close to zero capacity. Like these people have gone far. Even for the large organizations or companies that are not as big as Dangote and others, right? They have built structure over the years that for you to gain access, you have to start going through, discuss with the meeting. They might even forget you. So you want to ensure that you're going from the top. Because if you approach it from bottom up, if you get it eventually, it's God's grace. But it's better to approach it from top bottom. Take a top to bottom approach. Do you understand? So the decision maker, or one of the major key decision makers, once they buy into it, they can move it downwards. So that way you already know that it has been assigned to somebody and it's coming from the person's organ.
But how do you now network with that decision maker? How do you network with that decision maker?
I was listening to, I think, the podcast with Kelvin.
Yeah.
Kelvin was talking about networking. I think I've heard him say something about networking, where he said you need to ask your others what you can do for them. So it was where he said it, which is also pretty much interesting and amazing, right? Just a super good way. But for businesses like Alpas and for us that have gone through, or let's say the businesses we focus on majorly are like large enterprise businesses, right? Humility is one key thing that has helped. Do you understand? I'll speak to that, then I'll tell you maybe a way that has also worked for me to get it. So humility has been one thing. So there are some customers with power till date that when I get into their office and like I meet maybe the MD or the owner, they'll probably be hitting me on my shoulder like, my boy, my son. Yeah, they see me as their son. Forget about it, I'm a very young guy. You get, right? So you touch me on, sorry, please, by the way. You touch me on, So you need to make them see it clearly and know that you are truly their boy. Now, their boy is just one thing. But on the aspect of value versus your competitors, can you give them value that is like something that is much more valuable than what they already get from the incumbents? If you can give them something better than that of the incumbent, it means you're bringing value to them. So value, that humility bit, and being able to manage relationships.
I had someone, I don't know if you know Navar Ravikant. He said something. He was like that he's not buying into all these network. They said networking is more or less like it has become much more valuable. The network will take care of itself.
I agree.
Like he said, become, quote unquote, become successful in one thing. Network will take care of itself. And I think it's one key thing that almost everyone who has sat on this famous couch keeps saying, value. It's improving your network also means improving your value.
Yeah, but so, I think our young generation gets it wrong.
They want to just exchange cards.
Yeah, they're profiling the next event to do, who's speaking, and how am I approaching the person?
Yeah.
I'm selling the person immediately. What do I do? This is what
I
do.
I was selling someone.
Yeah.
Oh, no. We hosted an event at the office where we invited different startup founders to our office, right? And whilst I was giving the keynote speech, I told them that I rarely go for events like conferences. There's only one conference I go for majorly. Maybe I might change subsequently. And that's African FinTech Summit in the US. So like I frequent the US like so. Again, Village Boy has gone to South Africa, now goes to US. Like, do you understand? So because the guy was one of those that invested in us at a very early stage.
Mm-hmm.
And each time he's having like an event, if I'm interested, they would always get me or say, oh, Sam, there's a part where you need to speak on and sort of a panel you need to join. I've never got, I don't know about others, for our own kind of business,
yeah.
I've never gotten any major value from those conferences. The customers we've been serving are these local people. They're not in those conferences. You won't find them there. The people that will make the decision and say, okay, let's move. You won't find them there. But yes, do you need that for like maybe a bit of PR and say you are in one or you went to so and so place, you put the picture up, you spoke at this.
Decision makers don't go to conferences.
Decision makers for our own type of customers, the type of audience we serve, they are not there. Because those conferences are tech conferences.
Yeah.
Would you see the MD of MedPlus in that conference? No, we bank MedPlus. Would you see the MD of Spa there? We bank Spa. Would you see the MD of ShopRite there? Eh?
Mm.
No, you won't see them.
So, I want to ask, did you bootstrap at the point when you started our path, or you went straight to investor?
And also the aspect where you pivoted.
Yeah, okay, started off with, I would answer all of the questions together. I started off with the whole one click checkout, raised $1 million first. By March, April 2022, the entire fund had finished. Yeah, the entire fund we raised had finished. We didn't have money anymore.
Is it snake?
No. So in building an infrastructure,
yeah,
truth be told, you would spend money.
Mm.
The fact that you can hold a product today and then you interact with that product and you have little to zero complaints that your money did not go.
Yeah.
One time you log in, I've seen the same 1,220,000 naira sitting inside.
Yeah.
There are people behind doing that work. There's an infrastructure that has been built, a solid infrastructure powering that. Do you understand? So lots of our money went into that. Now, this is also to say that at the early stage, you would make several mistakes. But your ability to make those mistakes and make those mistakes forward is key.
Yeah.
So some of that money wasn't just spent. Most of that money was even spent on infra. Then yes, you know, when you receive money, anyone who speaks otherwise, I don't know, when money enters your hand for the first time, $1 million, I tell you for free, you will spend money on things you shouldn't spend money on. This is when reality sets in, your brain will recalibrate back. Or maybe you are not noticing the money is coming down. Your brain will start recalibrating that, oh, I shouldn't have spent it on this. So I should have reserved it for this. So because, you know, the next person who wants to give you money wants to see the traction you have made based upon the initial money.
Yeah, your first round.
Yes. Do you understand? Now, I can say to a very large extent that we have spent our money well. Like, I mean, we did spend our money well at the time, the first one. But by March, April, e-commerce lost its momentum. I was fundraising because I lead fundraising. I was fundraising at the time, and fast. I slept and I woke up the news went all around. It was a major one that FAS had gone bankrupt after raising $250 million in 18 months. Right, and the investors who were going to come into our seed round were people who had just invested in FAS. So, you know, they definitely want to have that entire chain. If they are the ones owning the ones in the US, let them own the one in Africa.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and we're the only one to check out at the time out of Africa.
So you were the first for the African?
First for Africa, yes. Even the founder of FAS were together in Lisbon, Portugal, at the time in 2021.
Your village
to Lisbon. Yeah, from village to Sigo, Lisbon, in Portugal. Do you understand?
Yeah.
So, woke up, saw that news. I didn't know what else to do.
Was it after the news you were together with the founder?
No, before.
Oh, before. I was gonna ask whether he
his
blood pressure was.
No, it was before. It was before, and it didn't make sense again at all. So all of the investors, the VCs that were speaking to, were already progressing to the next stage, backed out.
So would you say that there's actually a time to give up on something? Because it looks like you gave up on it, like from the positive side of you, because you saw that there's no headway here. It's just like me being innovative with typewriter. There's no amount of innovation that will give typewriter that will make it valuable in this current market. So is there a time for you to just be honest, give up and pivot? I think the word is not give up, but pivot.
Yeah, so that was the time when that happened, and we also now looked at things, because you also need to look at the market so well. What happened to FAS? What's happening to gold? What's also happening to you in Nigeria? We realized that truly, this market don't go well, don't they reset? Do you understand? I can remember I was with my phone. Someone I respect so much. Right, I still respect him so well till date. From nowhere, sent me a text on WhatsApp. I can remember word for word what the message he sent to me. Because at that point, I was to tell my team, hey guys, let's pack up, let's go home. They don't finish. From nowhere, I didn't call him, I didn't text him, nothing. He just sent me a text at night. Say, Sam, I'm seeing what is happening too fast. He said, I don't know why this company did not support them. But Sam, I'm here for you. Said, I told him, I said, I don't know what to think. They say, Sam, come and see me tomorrow at this hotel. That's no other person than the founder of Flutterwave, GB.
I want to check my WhatsApp. I want to check whether he messaged. Okay, it's not midnight.
But it shows the point of having powerful connections and powerful network. But for him to have sent you that text message would have done something of value for him.
Because the same track
and the same record. Or two, he didn't want another fintech company to go down. Or another payment gateway company to go down, because once it starts happening, the industry will start being chaotic, the bad news will start being chaotic, and the next in line is Flutterwave. I might be wrong, I'm just looking at both sides, but you have best experience.
So I don't know, I can't say, right? But our ecosystem is still a very small ecosystem. So the ability for those who have gone ahead to support those upcomers is what gives us the strength to keep moving. Do you understand? Mm-hmm. So that day when he sent me, he said, I did for you. Let's see. I can remember the next day, he didn't know I was even sick. The sickness multiplied when FAS had that. Like I was sick. I went to meet himself and his team. I think they were having a retreat somewhere at Lagos Continental. So they had different rooms. But there was this other small boardroom, like this space. All right, so I got in there. And he started asking me, how far, what do you need? This is and that. So I'm the kind of person that loves writing. I love analysis a whole lot. Mm. Picked up the marker, turned the board sheet, and I started analyzing, telling him. I was speaking, and all of them, including him majorly, placed his hand on his head and said, why are you not on my team? And I laughed. I said, Sam, should we acquire you now? I laughed. He said, I know you will say no. Do you understand? Mm. And that was it, and we partnered. That partnership was one of the things, because again, when we were going down, fund had finished, I was already nurturing a new idea of building a bank. Though, to be very fair and honest, building a bank has always been my dream.
Yes.
That's always been my dream from day one. Mm-hmm. But I needed to move from one thing to the other, and then into build it. That's how it's been, like, build a bank, proper bank. Yes. So that was it, and that was one of the things that helped that partnership to move to the next phase. I started issuing POS. We started issuing POS terminal. The first 1,000 POS terminal we got, as expensive, POS terminals have always been expensive in a way. I didn't spend $1. I got everything through a partnership. Brand new chassis. Do you understand? Got everything. Got my team ASAP. Everybody get to work. Everybody was being paid comfortably, doing their work and stuff.
And you still kept the brand name?
100%. And then we now moved it and passed business bank. Focused on. So, you know, in P&G those days, I did modern trade and relationship across board with all of those large businesses. So I went to them because I also know how to attack people one-on-one. So I started approaching those
people. Sales?
Everything came back 100%.
So and up?
Yeah, fire on. We fired on. In less than 2022, right? That was already June, July, when we pivoted to business banking. We started building out our products to tilt into like a business app. So by the time we've been building, even till now, we're still building.
Yeah.
But at least it was still a bit scrappy to start working, I think, at about October, November. By January, the next year, being 2023, we had already started banking all the category king businesses in Nigeria across industries. MedPlus, Spa, ShopRite. 100%.
How many months did it take you?
I think if not anything, right, my team, the team that did that work, did a fantastic job. Till tomorrow, I will respect them. We did a pivot. I don't think if anyone has done that kind of pivot we did. We pivoted from one culture channel to business banking under 3 weeks. 3 weeks. One of my engineers, my lead engineer, left after it. He said, Sam, I can't continue. He said it was too much for him in his head. He couldn't contain it. He came to my house, he was crying. So it was a heavy work. He said he couldn't carry it anymore. He's still my friend till date, right? For the first time I cried, he was in my house. He was crying, I was crying because he was leaving. 3 weeks, pivots. It was heavy.
How are you going to build a product? It looks like
it was a heavy thing. That movement, right? And that was it. And
was it the text message that gave you that? Was it
No. So with or without the text, right? To be honest, our past would still not have died. No, it can never. Right? But you know, God always has a way of bringing helpers to you. So maybe he was the one God.
So that's what you said now. If there's a guy who is fresh out of school, what would be your advice for such a person? Get a job or build a business?
Get a job.
Because it looks like the job you got actually gave you that leverage to be able to build.
Yeah, industry knowledge is very important. It's very extremely important. Right? If you go to my page today on Instagram, I don't post much. You must have seen it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A man of few words.
You'll notice I wear more red cap.
Yeah, true.
Do you understand?
Yeah.
If you want to build a bank, you have to position for the folks you want to see. Do you understand?
Yeah.
So, the job is the job. Really.
Kenichi, it looks like, you know, was it I was telling? I think I was telling you that. The baby boomers generation bank was a cheat code to generational wealth. Generational wealth. The men who, if you look at the Tonys, the even Otedola actually owns a bank. And it's more or less like, it's like you just sit down, you have access to capital. There is nothing that capital cannot do in this life. Mm-hmm. And if you have access to capital, you don't even have to have the idea or the strategy or the technical know-how. The idea strategy and the strategist, the ideas bank, and the person who has the technical skill will flock to you because you have the capital. And so with capital comes the opportunity to fund this, fund that, fund that. So it's more or less like a cheat code to life. And I was discussing with somebody that I feel that those days it was the cheat, it's still the cheat code to life because it's now in a it's packaged in another way, like fintech. So that banking, there's because you have access to money. And you have access to money that is in the full faith of the government. Because you're like more or less the poster boy of the government.
Yeah.
Yes, if you own a bank. The government is saying, I've licensed this guy to take your money. Can you bring your money to my house? No, you can't. But you can bring your money to a stranger. You don't know the teller who's counting. Do you know the teller? Do you have a relationship with the banker? So it's more or less like the cheat code to life. Am I saying anything? What is the reason? You're mom. Why? You're not saying anything.
You don't want to say more. You don't have to say anything. But I want to talk. This has been a burning conversation in my head. I want to have for you. The Nigerian VC space. Are they really mainstream like the American VC space? Funds, partners, or how they are described. Because you see most tech companies, they're raising dollars and mostly coming in from the American guys or maybe the Saudi guys. You barely see Nigerian VC playing front stage in that. Some of the VCs I know that played front stage in that is Tekede. I know they funded Boundless Pay, they funded this crypto startup owned by Lady Roots. I forgot him. Beats Mama. They funded Beats Mama. So the Nigerian VC
Affirm. They also funded Affirm.
How can young founders assess them? And how does the VC space work for Nigerians?
So I would say the same way founders are out there hunting. Right, looking for VCs, investors to give them money. It's the same way these VCs
are hunting.
Also hunting and looking for founders. Right, but one key thing that needs to be spelled out clearly is the fact that investors, right, angel investors, VCs, they already have like a model pre-outlined that, okay, on that model, they have everything defined. This will be their typical type of founder to invest in. The founder they are to invest in must have A, B, C, D, E. On that model, they would also have, okay, these are the industries they want to invest in. Some VCs, some investors are industry agnostic. Do you understand? They invest in any industry. Some are very niched. To say, okay, we only invest in health tech.
Yeah.
Some will say, well, they only invest in fintech. Some will say they only invest in agri-tech. Do you understand? So I think founders need to understudy these angel investors and as well VCs to understand their investment thesis, like everything, how, who they do that for. Then you check yourself and say, okay, do I fit into all of this? If I fit into all of these, you can bring out like 100 of them, 150 of them, and start shooting out messages or start getting people, other founders, to introduce you to them. Because I've also seen that introductions work better and faster than cold reach outs.
Okay, so can you run us through the process, the ABC of funding? ABC of funding, I wouldn't say from the VC point of view, because you're not a VC. I know you have an intention to move on.
No, I don't though.
You don't, and you own a bank. You see the conundrum. But if what is the ABC of receiving farm? Fresh out of uni, learning, creating a business, what should that person do to be able to attract investors?
All right, so the same way you think about a product, that you want to grow a business, and let's say you're into products,
yeah,
right, not like the service line, you want to think about what is called early adopters. So let's say I'm in here and I work here and I'm building a fintech, or I'm trying to solve a particular niche problem.
Yeah.
When I build out the solution or something, maybe the first people I want to take it to will be the people I know in here to say, test it out, use it. Does this solve a problem for you? Mm-hmm. If it does solve a problem for you, next thing is, okay, I want to start scaling up, okay, from 5 customers to maybe 10. I'm asking you to introduce me to another person, like each and every one of you, right? That's the same way looking out for investment or raising funding. That's the same way it works.
Yeah.
The bank you see today, being our path, started off with a loan of 600,000 naira. So I think I didn't mention it earlier.
Mm.
You know Prof in the BC?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know him? Tekedia.
Yeah, Tekedia.
Mm. Tekedia Capital started because of me. The name Tekedia Capital went live because of me. Do you understand? Like, I remember I was the one who told him he needs to open a page on LinkedIn. He needs to also go to Twitter. And he did all of those.
Wow.
So the first money I received in building our path was from Prof, a loan of 600,000 naira. I signed it. I had not seen it with my eyes. After 2 weeks, he gave me another loan of 3.2 million naira. The only thing that made him give me the next and the next was that if for every single money he gave to me, I told him, okay, this is what I want to be using for. I came back to him to show him progress.
Yeah.
Do you understand? That, okay, we've been able to move from this to this. And eventually, out of like the $1 million that was raised then, he invested over $600,000 of it.
Mm.
So I think building trust from nothing to something.
So was it debt financing or just plain loan?
The over $600,000 was equity.
Okay. I was talking about
Okay. Equity, right? But the first money he gave to me was a loan of 600 signed to pay back with interest. The next 3.2 million naira after 2 weeks was a loan signed to pay interest, of which I've paid all of this money.
Money.
Okay, let us talk about what is happening in the ecosystem. Mm-hmm. There've been a lot of issue when investors raise funds.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a lot of issues around the ecosystem. Reckless spending, sometimes, a few of them. What is your take regarding, and you also made a passive statement regarding that when you raised your first $1 million, you're like, hey, there's some things you spent on that you weren't supposed to spend on and all whatnot. What is your take regarding what is happening in the ecosystem? Because I remember when I had my first business show this year, I had 3 seconds silence for like nothing less than 7 startups, because they went down the drain. We had some lack of funding. After raising $70 million, the 7 of them, cumulative sum, and they still failed. We had co-founders conflict. We had lack of funding. We had governance issues. So what do you think is really the issue? I remember a story regarding the founders of Payday, the founders of what is it called? One of these other companies, Mara is also one of those, spending ending salary $100,000 and all of that. What is really happening?
So you know, like you already mentioned,
yeah,
right? Whilst talking about like the few, I think you mentioned a few causes, like things you think are like the causes. You said lack of corporate governance.
Yeah.
You spoke about co-founders conflicts amongst a few others, right? I'll tell you this for free. In the startup world, a lot of people talk about corporate governance being an important thing to have. And to be very honest, I agree. But the big question is, what's the impact of that corporate governance? To what extent can it go? Because in the end, corporate governance speaks to lots of things put together. It starts from the structure, internal structure, building internal structure. It starts from having a board. Do you understand?
Yeah.
Now, you bring in, or you set up a board. Now, what everyone is pushing you on is the next round. The next round, next round, next round, next round. Go and raise the next amount. You need to meet this milestone to go and raise the next amount. Now, while you're doing that, or pushing the founder, because certainly you have to push the founder, you've given the founder money you raised from your LPs.
Mm.
That money has to work.
True.
What's the founder thinking of?
Next round.
Thinking of next round, maybe. He's thinking of what to do. It means he will do anything possible to get to the next round.
Mm-hmm.
In doing anything possible, what would happen?
You blow cash
now. You do different things. But the ones you do, thinking that they are right, but eventually you realize that they are wrong, or they were wrong decisions.
Mm.
That's one, right? But then it's also important to note that if a founder really wants to build a business, and that founder is determined to genuinely build a business, they will build it. If they have the capacity, yes, they will. But if a founder did not start up that business genuinely on the foundation of integrity and genuineness to build a real business, nothing will happen.
So you're talking about the why?
The why. Do you understand? Nothing would happen. Do you understand? But yes, there are some exceptions. Right, where different founders genuinely set out to build a real business, maybe due to one reason or the other, maybe they eventually discover that it wasn't time for that idea, or the amazing product they had built did not meet an amazing market. Then maybe they have to go home. And maybe most of the time, maybe their funds probably would have been exhausted and all of those things, right? They have to go home. So it's not all companies that have shut down maybe due to lack of fund, or maybe mismanagement of funds and stuff. Some have genuinely shut down maybe because their amazing product did not make an amazing market, and maybe they ran out of fund. Some have genuinely also shut down because of mismanagement of funds. Do you understand?
Mm-hmm.
When you're not spending your own money, you spend it how you want to spend it, right?
Yeah.
I know how much of my money and family that has gone into the bank, like personal.
Yeah.
I'm not referring to 500K. Do you understand?
Yeah.
In USD. Way, way above that. So, and I've not gone to market for a long time to fundraise. But hopefully, maybe subsequently, like maybe later in the year. So when I think about that money, where it's coming from, I have to keep putting in the work.
Okay, so I want to talk about the e-commerce sector because it's tech. I want to talk about the future of e-commerce because there are some people hell-bent on, okay, I want to be an e-commerce, I want to build an e-commerce platform. Copy, I just shut down in Kenya.
Yeah.
2 days ago, after raising $200 million, Jumia and the rest are not doing well. So we had a conversation before we started, and I want to ask, what's the future of e-commerce in the African market?
I don't think e-commerce has a future in Nigeria and Africa, right, if last mile logistics is not solved. Yeah, there's no future for e-commerce if last mile logistics is not solved. That's my thinking. Again, anyone can quote me wrong and say this guy is just shitting stuff, and that's fine. But the only way you can tell me what I'm saying is wrong is when you prove me wrong.
True.
Right? I don't think e-commerce has a future if last mile logistics is not. What's e-commerce? What's e-commerce?
Purchasing stuff online and then delivering to your doorstep.
Yeah, e-commerce is basically logistics.
Yeah, logistics.
But you can purchase anything online. Anyone can build out anything for you to buy something.
Sure.
We can quickly set up something and someone will start buying something from you online. Is that not it?
Yeah.
But when you buy those things, they must get to you. If last mile logistics is not solved, there's no future for e-commerce.
We're rounding off now. On a final note, I would love, we have a culture of telling us about who you want to see on this couch and leaving one question for that person. When we get a person, we ask the person the question.
Did you ask someone, did someone recommend, so you want someone tell you on this same couch, the same way that they wanted to see?
No, none. Okay. But you were actually recommended by off the couch.
Okay. So you said if I mention the person, I would...
You can ask the person a question. So when the person comes, that's the first question I'm going to ask. And ask the person.
Did you do that for me?
No.
Okay. Okay. There's a guy I want you to invite.
Okay.
His name is Williams of Truck.
Williams of Truck.
Yeah, his name is Williams. His company is called Truck.
Truck.
T-R-U-Q.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm curious to know how he would build a $1 billion business out of Truck. Yeah.
So. Okay. Truck. Williams. Yeah.
Williams.
Nigerian?
Yeah, sure. He's here.
Okay. Williams. From Sam. How are you going to build a $1 billion market valuation company out of Truck? I think it's something that we need to unravel at the Frankly Business Podcast. And so when you come to our famous couch, we're definitely going to answer that question.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very, very big thank you to you, Sam. Amazing, amazing conversation. Kelechi.
Yeah, I learned a lot. He's more of the chill, reserved, calculated. He doesn't want to trend, but the road is easy. Well, I get. But I learned a lot. I understand. I get more insight about raising funds and how it works. And thank you. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. It's been a great time, ladies and gentlemen. And this is where we call it a wrap on this episode of the Frankly Business Podcast. Do your bit by subscribing, liking, and giving us a shout out. Perhaps share, like. Kelechi, what else do they do?
Yeah, them liking and sharing helps us bring more guests because the numbers go up. And when we shoot them a DM like, hi, we want to have you on our podcast, it's okay, yes, they have 100,000 people. But if you don't like our subscribe, we can't bring excellent people like this to come and discuss this with you. So, please help us be the community.
It's a great time. See you next episode. Cheers.